Welcome to Aaron Mankey's Cabinet of Curiosities, a production of iHeartRadio and Grim and Mild.
Our world is full of the unexplainable. And if history is an open book, all of these amazing tales are right there on display, just waiting for us to explore. Welcome to the Cabinet of Curiosities.
That little device in your hand, or your pocket, you know, the one with the touchscreen and the web browser, it's called a phone, but its purpose has become more important than that. It keeps us in touch with people all over the world. It connects us to all kinds of social media platforms. And most importantly, it captures those everyday moments in a snap. Our phone cameras are indispensable, and they are the result of decades of research and development to get them smaller, faster, and more powerful. Because, as they always say, the best camera is the one you have with you. But long before we carried them in our pockets, cameras were big boxes made of wood and glass. It took hundreds of years to get to where we are today, and a number of photographic innovations occurred during that time. But one has been forgotten over the years, which is surprising, because it was also one of the most influential. It was the result of work performed by an English polymath named William Henry Fox Talbot. In 1835, Talbot invented a way to capture images on paper. He was aware of certain devices used by artists, such as the camera obscura, which projected an image on the inside of a small box. But he wanted a way to save the picture permanently, and so he got to work developing a special kind of paper. It was writing paper, coated in salt and silver nitrate. When the surface of the paper was exposed to light, the chemicals would darken and preserve the image imposed upon them. It was a technique that he called the calotype process. And Talbot used his special paper to capture photos of things like the construction of Nelson's Column at Trafalgar Square and portraits of people that he knew. The images were a stark difference from today's photographs, though. They almost seem like negatives today, where the light portions are dark and the parts where there should be dark are actually light in tone. But remember, this was one of the first times that people saw a reproduction of a moment that was not sketched or painted. I mean, this was groundbreaking. Meanwhile, another photographer was entering the fray with his own invention. His name was Louis Daguerre, and he was a French artist who had been experimenting with silver salts and how they react to light. His camera used a copper sheet plated in silver, and when that sheet was exposed to iodine crystal vapor, it formed a coating of silver iodine on one side, which was then blasted with external light. It took a while, but the exposure eventually rendered a clear image. His creation was called a daguerreotype. But where the two processes differed was in the calotype's versatility. For example, the translucent negative image created by the calotype process could be used to create positive prints. The two men also went different ways when sharing their gifts with the rest of the world, and that's mostly why the calotype has all but been forgotten by modern photographers. You see, Talbot patented his process across England, Scotland, Ireland, and Wales, which cost him a pretty penny. He also spent a lot of money defending his patents from infringement. This led to very few paid licenses for that patent, and almost no lasting use within the industry, even though Talbot's work did more to push modern photography forward than Daguerre's. In fact, by defending his patents so vociferously, Talbot helped spur innovation among amateurs who sought a way around expensive licenses, which pushed the technology forward. Daguerre, on the other hand, sold his patent to the French government, which made the daguerreotype process free for anyone to use anywhere in the world, except in Britain. Daguerre's agent, a guy named Miles Berry, had been granted a patent on his client's invention back in England. So now, any person looking to make daguerreotypes there had to pay for a license to do so. As for France, they compensated the inventor for his generosity with a lifetime pension. And it turned out that giving away one's patents to a more commercially viable process was the smart thing to do. Talbot, on the other hand, only loosened the restrictions on his own patents in the 1850s, after extensive pleading from the photographic community. He begrudgingly obliged. By 1852, hundreds of calotypes were being produced regularly, but it wasn't enough to overtake the daguerreotype. The combination of Talbot's vicious defense of his patents and the calotype's exhaustive development process helped seal its fate. Daguerreotypes eventually fell out of favor once other technologies, such as the ambrotype, provided quicker, less costly results. And that's what matters most when inventing something new. It has to be faster, cheaper, and better. Anything else just won't get developed. Our minds are constantly changing. The more we experience and learn, the more we unlock. We might study a new language or a musical instrument, activities that can cause our neurons to fire in different ways than they had before. But sometimes the brain can be temperamental. For example, we can walk into a room and suddenly forget what brought us there in the first place. Or we'll blank on the name of a famous actor we're trying to figure out what other movies they appeared in. But perhaps one of the most peculiar ways our mind plays tricks on us is déjà vu. Déjà vu is a French term that was coined by philosopher Émile Borac back in 1876. In English, it translates to already seen. Déjà vu is used to describe the sensation of having been in a certain place or situation before. Many of us have experienced déjà vu at one time or another. We'll enter a room and suddenly be overcome with the feeling of having been there in the past, even if it's a brand new place. Déjà vu has been linked to a number of different neurological conditions and disorders, including epilepsy and migraines. But there's a phenomenon that's similar to déjà vu, and it's a trick of the mind as well, except it's the exact opposite. It's called jamais vu, or never seen in French. Unlike déjà vu, which makes the person feel as though they've been somewhere before, jamais vu gives someone the sense that place that they've been to or a situation they've already experienced is somehow brand new to them again. It's hard to imagine such a thing happening to us today, but we actually deal with jamais vu more often than we realize. You can even do it right now by picking a random word like dog or road and repeating it out loud over and over again. After a while, it doesn't sound like a word anymore. Even writing it numerous times in a row achieves the same effect. Back in 2006, English researcher Chris Moulin at the University of Leeds published the results of a study he had conducted. He asked 94 undergraduates to write out several words multiple times. Some words were common, like door, while others were lesser known, such as sword. Participants were instructed to write as quickly as possible, but they were free to stop for any reason. For example, if they suddenly felt strange or if their hand cramped. Moulin wasn't going to turn red in the face if anyone needed a break. They were then told to provide their reason for the pause. And the results? 70% of the group put down their pens because the terms they were writing stopped looking like words entirely, and this typically happened after only about a minute. Their jamais vu did not discriminate either. Whether a word was common or previously unknown, participants stopped recognizing them after they were copied about 33 times. In a second experiment, Moulin had everyone write the article the, an extremely common word that we are all familiar with. It took even less time for 55% of them to stop scribbling due to jamais vu. One person reported that the words lose their meaning the more you look at them, while another claimed, almost looks like it's not really a word, but someone's tricked me into thinking it is. Despite Moulin's modern experiment, the concept of jamais vu goes back a lot further. American psychologist Margaret Floy Washburn was testing its effects all the way back in 1907. She had asked one of her students to stare at a word for 3 minutes, at which time the arrangement of the letters began to look unlike anything in the English language. Washburn called the phenomenon, and the ensuing academic paper, the loss of associative power in words after long fixation. Decades later, with Chris Moulin's help, we finally had a much shorter and much more catchy name. Jamais vu, much like its sister déjà vu, can be caused by other issues of the mind, including epileptic seizures. But for many of us, it's just part of everyday life. Our brains are capable of strange and wonderful things. And sometimes, they make the words we see each day look like strange shapes from another planet.
I hope you've enjoyed today's guided tour of the Cabinet of Curiosities. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or learn more about the show by visiting curiositiespodcast.com. This show was created by me, Aaron Mankey, in partnership with How Stuff Works. I make another award-winning show called Lore, which is a podcast, book series, and television show. And you can learn all about it over at theworldoflore.com. And until next time, stay curious.